Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh and welcome to Ummah Radio. You are listening to the Mustalah al-Hadith class with myself, Abu Mus'ab. Now, this is a rather new class which only had just started last week. The book we are doing is known as the Muqaddimah fi Usul al-Hadith of Mulana Abdul Haq al-Dihalawi rahimahullah. Last time we had just done an introduction basically to the book and basically just mentioned one, two small little things. But we hadn't started the actual first lesson itself. So if you are following up from this particular print of the book, you can download it from Ummah Forum, which is www.ummah.com/forum. You'll see in the Ummah Radio section, there will be a thread there called Tuesday Mustalah al-Hadith class, or something of the sort like that. And in there will be a download link to the book. Now, if you have that particular print of the book, then tonight, inshallah, where we will be starting from is page 33 of the actual book itself, or 35 if you are using a PDF reader. So depending on just which one, which version, which number you're looking at, you'll either look for number 33 or 35. So we move on now just to an introduction as to what exactly is a hadith. So Bismillah walhamdulillah wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillahi wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala. So on page 33 or 35, depending again which number you are looking at, it says, الفصل الأول في تعريف الحديث وأنواعه. The first chapter deals with understanding what exactly is a hadith and its various types, the various types of a hadith. So he comes first and he says, تعريف مصطلح الحديث, the definition of what a hadith actually is. So he says, اعلم أن الحديث في اصطلاح جمهور المحدثين يطلق على قول النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم وفعله وتقريره. He say, know that a hadith, in the terminology of the majority of the محدثين, this word hadith is used unrestrictedly for any statement of Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم, for any action of Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم, or for any تقرير. Now, I would explain what taqrir is, but he does that in the very next line, so I'll read his line and then we'll see what is the meaning of taqrir. So he says, وَمَعْنَى التَّقْرِيرِ أَنَّهُ فَعَلَ أَحَدٌ أَوْ قَالَ شَيْئًا فِي حَضْرَتِهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ وَلَمْ يُنْكِرْهُ وَلَمْ يَنْهَهُ عَنْ ذَلِكَ بَلْ سَكَتَ وَقَرَّرَهُ. He says, what is the meaning of taqrir? Taqrir is that a person did something or said something in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam and he did not prohibit him, nor did Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam find a problem with that, but rather Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam kept silent and agreed with it. So how we would translate normally the word taqrir is that anything, or rather let me do the three types of hadith again, is number one, and a statement of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Like for example, shroud your, wear white and shroud your dead within it. That's a verbal hadith. Then we have a hadith which is an action, which is like for example, masaha ala nasiyatihi wa khuffayhi, that Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam made masah of his forelock and wiped over his khuff. That is a, there's no words of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam mentioned, but it was an action done by Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So those are the two types. And the third type is if one of the sahaba radiyallahu anhum would do something and Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam never said anything against it. Now, he says here fi hadratihi, in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but this is not restricted to being in the presence, but rather it's something, anything which was done during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that would be the more correct way to state it. The more correct way is to say that anything which was done by a sahabi during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not condemn it, then in that case that is also considered to be sunnah. Why is that? Because Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to receive wahi directly from Allah. So the Quran was being revealed and everything of the sort. So if anybody were to do something and there was something wrong with it, immediately Allah would have sent down wahi to say so and so did something. How many times don't we see in a hadith that somebody would have done something at home and then the next day Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam would comment on that particular topic? We know that incident of the Sahaba, the famous incident where Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam asked, who is it that will host this person? And one Sahabi said, I will host him, because Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam didn't have food to host this person. So this Sahabi took this person home, and when he asked his wife, do we have any food? So she said, there's only just a little bit, just for us. So he said, put the children to bed hungry and put the dim the lights and give the food to the guests, so that they made as though they were eating as well. That's the reason for dimming the lights. That famous incident. Now Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam was not present at that gathering at the moment. But the next morning, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam praised the Sahabi and said that Allah was very pleased with the way you treated your guest. So whenever somebody would have done something, if it was something good, Allah would have informed Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And if it was something bad, then also Allah would inform Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So if any Sahabi did anything at any particular time during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and there was anything in the least wrong with it, then Allah would reveal the news of it to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam and give a command as to what should be done. Is it allowed? Is it not allowed? And things of that sort. So anything which was done during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam and was not prohibited, then such a thing will also be considered to be from the sunnah. So therefore, if you find the Sahaba did something during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and this is something you will see in ahadith as well, because a Sahabi would say, and you'll find this in the books of fiqh as well, that one Sahabi would comment and say that the Sahaba used to do this during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. No mention of the words or the action of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but rather just simply saying that this is what the Sahaba used to do during the lifetime of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And that would be sufficient to show that this action is also considered to be sunnah. So therefore we come to know that the three types of hadith is something which Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam physically did, or what Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam gave a command, or rather I should say spoke. One is verbal, one is physical, and the third is in agreement, where Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam did not contradict the action of a Sahabi. So that is what the three categories of hadith is. Okay, a question here asks, what does taqrir mean? Taqrir, iqrar, it means to affirm something. Basically, you can call it an affirmation. So an action, a statement, or an affirmation. These are the three types of ahadith you get. So either Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam affirmed something which somebody had done or said or done, or Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam himself said something, or Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam himself did something. So those are the three types of ahadith that you get. So linguistically, taqrir would mean an affirmation of a particular thing. So now he moves on to a little bit further. He says, وَكَذَلِكَ يُطْلَقُ الْحَدِيثِ عَلَىٰ قَوْلِ الصَّحَابِ وَفِعْلِهِ وَتَقْرِيرِهِ وَعَلَىٰ قَوْلِ التَّابِعِ وَفِعْلِهِ وَتَقْرِيرِهِ. He says, similarly, the word hadith, this word hadith, it's also used for the statement of a sahabi and for the action of a sahabi and also the affirmation of a sahabi. And likewise, the statement of a tabi'i, an action of a tabi'i and an affirmation of a tabi'i. So he says that hadith is used for Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, for the sahaba, and for the tabi'in as well. So say, for example, Hazrat Abu Bakr radiyallahu anhu made a statement. Let's take the famous statement, Hazrat Umar radiyallahu anhu, نَحْنُ قَوْمٌ أَعَزَّنَ اللَّهُ بِالْإِسْلَامِ, that we are a nation who have been honored by Islam, that Allah has honored with Islam. So some muhaddithin, you would find in some books and things where a statement like this is termed as a hadith. So it's not a problem if it's termed as a hadith in that manner. Okay, you have two different words. You would find, okay, there's more than one actually. You would find it being called a hadith. You would find something being called an athar. You would find it also being called a khabar. So different words the muhaddithin and the Sahaba had used for, or rather I should say that the Salaf had used when referring to a hadith. But that we will come to, the difference between a khabar, athar, and hadith later on, inshallah. Any case, so here he mentions and he says that even the words, action and affirmation of a sahabi and tabi'i will also be considered to be a hadith. But now you see, in this particular part of the book, we have footnotes. These footnotes have all been added by Maulana Salman Nadwi. And here, there's two footnotes, one and two, both together. And in this particular point here on the sahabi's action and affirmation and the tabi'i's action and affirmation being considered to be a hadith, he says, ما ذهب إليه المؤلف رحمه الله تعالى من أن تقرير الصحابي وتقرير التابعي أيضا يعد من الحديث فيه من التوسع ما لا يرضاه المحدثون. He says that the opinion of the author of the book here, where he says that an affirmation of a sahabi or an affirmation of a tabi'i is also considered to be a hadith, he says this is making the matter too vast, too wide, and it is something that the muhaddithin are not pleased with. Meaning, the muhaddithin as a whole, or rather the majority of the muhaddithin, they would not consider the affirmation of a tabi'i to be a hadith as well. That is why I said you would find that there are different terms like an athar and a hadith and things like that. Okay, for the majority of most of the time, you would find that the word hadith is used mostly for Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and at times also for the Sahaba radiallahu anhum. Then you find something which is known as an athar, and an athar is used also a lot for Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That is why we have, for example, Kitabul Athar, a book which is a book of hadith, but it's termed Kitabul Athar. A hadith are also called athar, and there's no problem with it. But you would find more the statements of the Sahaba radiallahu anhum as being termed as athar. Sometimes the muhaddithin just decided to use different words like athar for the statements of Sahaba and hadith for the statements of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, just to have a bit of difference between the two. But there's no harm whether you call a hadith an athar, a khabar, or a hadith. And in fact, Imam al-Tahawi rahimahullah, he's got a difference between khabar and athar and things. He's got a small article that he had written on that particular point. Any case, that's straying a bit away from the actual topic over here. So any case, the muhaddithin, according to Maulana Salman Nadwi over here, he says that they do not use this word taqreer, or rather the affirmation of a tabi'i, they do not consider this also to be part of a considered as a hadith. The reason why is because obviously, like I mentioned earlier, the wahi that used to come to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and also because Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, if anything was done in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam would never be able to keep silent on any evil being committed. But ordinary people who are not anbiya alayhi salam, they are not under that same level of purity. A normal person may, out of fear or things like this, hold back from correcting a munkar. Maybe you see the ruler is saying something wrong and you keep silent because he would kill you. This is something which normal people do, which the Anbiya alayhi salam, Allah has protected and safeguarded them. That is the ismatul Anbiya. They are sinless and protected from all that sort of stuff. But a tabi'i, the Sahaba radiallahu anhum, we know that whenever somebody would say something, they would always come out and condemn it if it was wrong. But yeah, in any case, Maulana Salman Nadwi, he says that even this affirmation of a Sahabi, this also is not considered to be a hadith. But in any case, that's neither here nor there, because when something is part of the deen, the ulama have already discussed it and placed it in its correct places. And if it's not part of the deen, that too has been placed and explained and expounded upon in detail. So in any case, that was now the definition of the three types of a hadith, which was a fi'al, a qawl, and a taqreer. A statement, an action, and an affirmation. Okay, now we move on a little bit to the next page. He moves now on to different types of hadith. Now we did what? The hadith is broken down into three: fi'al, taqreer, and qawl. And together they are termed as hadith. Now from all of that, we're moving in away from the three types, and now all which will follow now is all now just in dealing in detail with the word hadith. Okay, just one extra point from myself here, which is not part of the book. if you looked at what was mentioned here above, in the word that the Mawlana Abdul Haq Dihlawi rahimahullah has mentioned here, he used the word hadith and said that it refers to an action, a statement, or an affirmation of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So that is what is termed as hadith. And for the most part, for us ourselves, we also, when we speak of a hadith, then we speak of the same thing. A hadith is broken into two things, a matan and a sanad. The matan is the actual text of the hadith, and the sanad is the chain of narration. So a hadith is broken down into these two things. Now when we, general ordinary people, when we speak of a hadith, we refer it to the matan. So we said, it comes in a hadith that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam said, "Man tashabbaha biqawmin fahuwa minhum," whoever imitates a nation, he is from them, for example. So we take this, "Man tashabbaha biqawmin fahuwa minhum," and we refer to this as a hadith. But in the terminology of the ulama of Jarh wa Ta'dil, when the ulama of Jarh wa Ta'dil, the criticism of narrators, those ulama who check the narrators out to see whether the chain is authentic or not, when they use the word hadith again, they don't refer to the matan, they don't refer to the actual text of the hadith, but rather they use the word hadith to refer to the sanad. So therefore when you see they say hadha hadithun sahih, they mean hadha hadithun sahihul isnad, that this hadith, its chain is authentic. Or that when they use this word, whether it's sahih, whether it's mawdu', whether it's munkar, whatever, they don't refer to the matan. They never refer to the actual text of the narration itself. They always deal with the chain of narration. So therefore, hadith in its broad nature would encompass both the text of the actual text of the hadith and the chain of narrations. Like I say, depending on which muhaddithin you are looking at, which books you are looking at the time, therefore you would find some who would say this is a hadith, and some would say that this here again is a hadith. So we don't reject the matan and say that, or rather I should say the ulama of Jarh wa Ta'dil, they would not be rejecting the matan. Because you have a hadith, for example, which comes with maybe 5 different chains. So they would comment on one particular chain and say, "Hadha hadithun ta'if," this is a weak hadith. Now some people may mistake it and think that the matan, the actual text of this hadith is weak, but that's not what the muhaddithin mean. They mean that this particular chain here is weak. Okay, it's strengthened because there are other supporting narrations which bring it up to the level of hasan, but intrinsically, in and of its own self, this particular chain is weak. So when they say that a hadith is weak, then they refer only to the chain of narration and not to the actual text itself. So that's just a little side note to the usage of the word hadith. Any case, we are now on page 34 or 36, like I say, depending on which number you are looking at. So now he moves on to the more important terms, let me put it that way. So he says, the first term that you come to learn is al-marfu', a marfu' hadith. So he says, فَمَنْ تَهَا إِلَى النَّبِيِّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ يُقَالُ لَهُ الْمَرْفُوعُ. A hadith which is linked all the way up to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, such a hadith is called marfu'. So any narration, if you find a narration that comes along and says that qala Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, or a sahabi says an Rasulillahi sallallahu alayhi wasallam, anytime when Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam is put as the final link in the chain, that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam said this, or this comes from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, that linkage is there, then such a hadith is termed as being marfu'. Or sometimes the sahabi would say, or the muhaddithin rather, they would say, Abdullah ibn Abbas radiyallahu anhuma marfu'an. They would use the term marfu', the literal word marfu', in the narration. When they use that, then they mean that it's reported from Hazrat Abdullah ibn Abbas radiyallahu anhuma, and he attributed it to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. So that is what a marfu' hadith is about. It's related actually to the next two terms as well. So let's do those ones as well, so you're not left out of the loop. So the second term, he says, al-mawquf. So al-marfu' is a hadith which is connected, it's not broken. Al-mawquf is now the second one. Al-Mawquf, he says, وَمَنْ تَهَا إِلَى الصَّحَابِي يُقَالُ لَهُ الْمَوْقُوفِ. He says that a hadith, or rather a narration, which ends by a sahabi, it is termed as being mawquf. Mawquf is like when a narration comes and Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is dropped out. Okay, he gives for examples himself. He says, كَمَا يُقَالُ قَالَ أَوْ فَعَلَ أَوْ قَرَّرَ إِبْنُ عَبَّاسٍ أَوْ عَنْ إِبْنِ عَبَّاسٍ مَوْقُوفًا أَوْ مَوْقُوفٌ عَلَى إِبْنِ عَبَّاسٍ. He says, for examples, you would find in the books of hadith, like how he says, qala, that Hazrat Abdullah ibn Abbas radiyallahu anhuma, he said, or he did, or he affirmed the taqreer, the qawl, and the fi'al. This would now be a mawquf hadith, because it's not being attributed to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. So it's a mawquf hadith. Or he says, you would find in some chains, أو عن ابن عباس, he would find عن ابن عباس رضي الله عنهما موقوفا. Like I mentioned earlier, you would find مرفوعا mentioned explicitly. So here, you would find موقوفا mentioned explicitly. So explicitly mentioned that the hadith stops at Hazrat Abdullah ibn Abbas رضي الله عنهما, and it is not attributed higher, or rather in the hadith it is not taken up and says that this is the words of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Or you would find in other books, it would be, of hadith, it would be say, for example, موقوفٌ على ابن عباس, that this hadith stops at Hazrat Abdullah ibn Abbas radiallahu anhuma. Just for example, but these are different terms. All means the exact same thing, but in different hadith, you would find it being used differently. Like this, موقوفٌ على ابن عباس أو عن ابن عباس موقوفا, so on and so forth. So this is how you see a hadith is موقوف, when you see it stops, whether it's Hazrat Abdullah ibn Abbas, Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, Hazrat Abdullah ibn Umar radiyallahu anhuma, whoever of the Sahaba it may be, when it stops by a Sahabi, then it's termed as being موقوف. Then the next and the last one rather, he says المقطوع. He says وَمَنْ تَهَا إِلَى التَّابِعِ يُقَالُ لَهُ الْمَقْطُوعُ. A narration which ends by a tabi'i, such a narration is termed as maqtu'. If we were to linguistically and literally translate the three terms, al-marfu' would mean a raised narration, a narration which is raised to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Al-mawquf would mean a stopped narration, a narration which is stopped before it reaches Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, while al-maqtu' would mean a cut-off narration, meaning it gets cut off by a tabi'i, it does not even reach a sahabi, it's cut off by a tabi'i, it does not go higher than that. So if it stops by, if it reaches Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, it's marfu'. If it reaches a sahabi, it is mawquf. And if it reaches a tabi'i only, it's maqtu'. So those are the three types of a hadith that you would get, and it will be dealt with in more further detail later on in the book itself, that how can a mawquf hadith be used, who uses a mawquf hadith, can istidlal, can you use it for dalil, is it sufficient to base a portion of the deen on a mawquf, and all things like this will all come later on inshallah. So that is basically the introduction to what a hadith is. Okay, yeah, the next chapter would be al-hadith wal-athar, the difference between a hadith and an athar. Is there a difference or not? I just touched on the topic earlier, but this will now be actually using it, or rather dealing with it in detail. But inshallah, we will stop here to not do too much at a time, so that it's sufficient to be able to absorb everything. So we will stop on this point here at maqtu', inshallah. So just to recap, a hadith is broken down into three types, which is fi'al, qawl, and taqreer. An action, a statement, and an affirmation. And the words of a sahabi, tabi'i, their actions and their affirmations are also termed to be a hadith according to some muhaddithin, and according to others like Mulana Salman Nadwi says, they don't consider the taqreer of a tabi'i and sahabi to be part of the hadith. Then a marfu' hadith is that one which reaches Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. A mawquf hadith is that one which stops at a sahabi, and a maqtu' hadith is that one which stops at a tabi'i. Okay, so like I say, we're not going to rush the book and let you forget half the things just by flying through it. So inshallah, then we stop on this point here of maqtu', and next time we will continue from al-hadith wal-athar. Okay, before signing off, a question has just come through. Is a mawquf hadith the one that ends at a sahabi and it doesn't reach the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam at all? That is correct. A mawquf hadith is that one which stops at a sahabi. But mawquf will be dealt with in further detail in the actual book itself as to how a mawquf works and all that things of the sort. Because you see, for example, there are things that the Sahaba radiallahu anhum would not have known except if it comes through Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Let's say, for example, a narration stops at a Sahabi, but the Sahabi is talking about things which will take place in Jannah, for example. Now, there's no way a Sahabi or any other person for that matter can know what is going to take place in the year after except if they heard it by Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So therefore, we know that this narration has to go further than the Sahabi himself because he does not have the knowledge to speak on matters of the unseen. But obviously, it comes through what he learned by Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, which came through wahi. So, and when it comes to masail of deen, that a sahabi did something, and the sahaba radiyallahu anhum, they loved the life of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That is why, if a sahabi did an action, like we say, Hadrat Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiyallahu anhuma, he did not do raf'ul yadain, raising his hands after every action in Salah. So he did not do it this way, so therefore his action is something which he learned from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So you have all these sort of things like this, and inshallah, like I say, it will be dealt with later on in the book when he actually comes down to a mawquf and gives examples and things like that of the sort. Okay, another question, follow-up question. Are these last three types of hadith the levels of hadith? I would not exactly call it levels. If you want to call it levels, I suppose you can. There's nothing wrong in calling it levels. But this is not authenticity levels of the hadith. It would affect the authenticity, this obviously, the maqtu', mawquf, and marfu'. These levels would affect the authenticity, because like I say, we'll come to the point of whether a mawquf hadith can be used to prove an action in the sharia. Can it be used as dalil, yes or no? In any case, just to mention, there is ikhtilaf amongst the muhaddithin on this point, and according to the Hanafi and the Maliki ulama, a mawquf hadith is acceptable to use as proof, and so on and so forth. We'll come to that inshallah. But any case, so if you want to call it levels, you can call it levels, there's no harm in it. But this is not the actual authenticity levels of the hadith, because that is sahih, hasan, da'if, mawdu', and that's the actual levels of hadith. And then you'll come to why something is hasan and why it's mawdu' and why it's da'if and so on and so forth later on again inshallah. Okay then, so with that being that, we will then stop here and continue on next week inshallah. So until then, we end for now and we say wa sallallahu wa sallama wa baraka ala nabiyyina Muhammad subhanallahi wa bihamdihi subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Wa alaykumus salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.